FAA reauthorization has fallen off the rails again. NASA is charged with ethics violations, and the U.S. Air Force can't wait to put the Osprey to work. This is Aero News. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for downloading this AeroCast. Here's what's up in aviation for Friday, May 2nd, 2008. Any chance of getting the U.S. Senate to move on FAA reauthorization this week appear to be dead. On Wednesday, senators got sidetracked on an amendment to S-1300, which would have made it tougher for airlines to underfund their employee pensions. Reuters reports that senators with close ties to American and Continental jumped in to block that effort. By Wednesday night, that proposal was dropped, but attention turned to a slew of unrelated riders attached to the bill, including a boost to highway spending. The Senate adjourned until today. The compromise bill has been guaranteed a presidential veto if it does not impose user fees on general aviation. As for when the FAA gets permanent reauthorization, I'm hanging onto my square in the office pool. March 2009, a little over halfway through the next administration's first 100 days. NASA's Inspector General charged this week that the board established to review development and construction of the agency's upcoming Orion manned spacecraft includes six employees of companies doing work on the capsule, in violation of both federal law and common sense ethics. The Associated Press reports that of the 19 members of the Orion Review Board, three are employed by Science Applications International Corp., which is tasked with building Orion test facilities. Two others, board chairman and former Skylab astronaut Ed Gibson and former NASA flight director Neil Hutchinson, are vice presidents and stockholders. Jack Garman, a former NASA employee and key figure with the Apollo program, works for Lockheed Martin, the prime builder of the Orion spacecraft. Two others work for contractors MEI Technologies and Gray Research Incorporated. NASA protests that the engineers qualified to make informed decisions regarding a highly specialized spacecraft will, by definition, usually work for either the space agency or one of its contractors. New York University professor Paul Light, who's an expert on governmental ethics, called the situation a flagrant abuse. Quote, "Not only is NASA ready to challenge the laws of physics, it appears more than willing to challenge the laws of Congress," unquote. One U.S. Air Force general says the CV-22 Osprey tilt rotor has performed so well in operational testing, he wants to move up the date for the craft's first actual mission for the service. Reuters quoted comments made recently before an audience by Lieutenant General Donald Worster, who heads Air Force Special Operations Command. The official initial operating capability date for Air Force Ospreys is February of next year, but Worster told industry and military officials that based on trials ending a few days ago, he wouldn't hesitate to send the Air Force's four mission-ready CV-22s on a mission if their unique capabilities were required. Another source, unnamed by Reuters, shared the enthusiasm. Quote, "It's such a leap in capabilities above what anybody can do with a conventional helicopter that there's definitely missions out there waiting for it. People have a lot of good ideas about how this aircraft could potentially be used," unquote. The Marine Corps has been flying its Ospreys in Iraq since October last year, and the aircraft has reportedly performed well. Last month, the Pentagon signed a $10 billion deal for 167 V-22s through 2012. The aircraft is manufactured by Bell and Boeing. A Pentagon spokesman confirms that U.S. Central Command conducted a strike against a known al-Qaeda target in Somalia Wednesday, but officials would not confirm news reports that the strike killed Aden Hashi Airo, the head of al-Qaeda in Somalia. There was also no word on the nature of the strike. The strike was near Dusa Mareb, that's north of the Somali capital of Mogadishu. Various news reports say as many as four AC-130 gunships took part. News reports said the strike killed between 8 and 12 people. U.S. officials have no information that substantiates that any civilians were killed or injured. Up next on ANN, Nevada's governor wants to bill Steve Fawcett's widow for the costs of the search. Hawaiian Air settles its case with Mesa. And the Missouri Senate votes yes on incentives for Bombardier. You're listening to Aero News.
Uncramp your style in a new Citation CJ2 Plus from Cessna. Now with integrated ProLine 21 avionics, FADEC, and a restyled cockpit and cabin. In the CJ2 Plus, you'll carry more payload than you could in the original CJ2. You'll climb and cruise faster. You'll have the freedom to use even shorter runways, and you'll do it all on less fuel. For a sure thing, call 1-800-4-CESSNA.
We're back with more of your Aero Briefing for May 2, 2008. I'm Paul Plagg. Like many states, Nevada faces a budget shortfall. Governor Jim Gibbons says one way he'll address it is by billing the widow of the late Steve Fawcett for the unsuccessful search for her missing husband last fall. The Associated Press reports that a spokesman for the governor told the Las Vegas Review-Journal Wednesday that Gibbons plans to bill Peggy Fawcett $687,000. That contradicts a statement one day earlier by State Emergency Management Director Frank Siracusa. Quote, "We do not charge the rich or the poor. There is no precedent where government will go after people for costs just because they have money to pay for it. You get lost, we look for you. It's a service your taxpayer dollars pay for," unquote. Fawcett went missing September 3rd after taking off from a private ranch in Yerington. Search and rescue volunteers aided state and federal crews, the Civil Air Patrol, and the Nevada National Guard. Cook County, Illinois Circuit Court Judge Jeffrey Malik declared Fawcett legally dead February 15th to allow Peggy to start settling what he called a vast eight-figure estate. Hotel magnate Baron Hilton, who owns the ranch from which Fawcett departed, voluntarily sent the state of Nevada a $200,000 check toward expenses, but apparently Gibbons wants more. The $687,000 would amount to roughly 0.07% of the state's projected $900 million budget shortfall. A protracted legal battle ended on Wednesday when Hawaiian Airlines announced it reached a settlement of its lawsuit against Mesa Air Group, Incorporated. Mesa was accused of misusing confidential and proprietary information obtained as a prospective bidder during Hawaiian's Chapter 11 reorganization in 2004. Mesa looked at the proprietary information, then launched competitor Go Airlines. U.S. Bankruptcy Court Judge Robert J. Ferris ruled against Mesa in October and ordered $80 million paid in damages to Hawaiian. In November, Mesa filed an appeal and was required to post a $90 million bond pending the outcome. Under the terms of the settlement agreement reached this week, Hawaiian Airlines will receive a cash payment of $52.5 million, and Mesa will withdraw its appeal. In a statement to ANN, Mesa was quick to point out that the settlement does not require the airline to admit wrongdoing. Quote, "This settlement does not restrict in any way Go's ability to continue to offer services in the Hawaiian inter-island market," unquote. The entry of Go into the Hawaiian market in June of 2006 was also blamed by Aloha Airlines for its eventual bankruptcy. The Missouri State Senate yesterday approved a revised incentive package aimed at luring Bombardier to build its new C-Series jet and the $375 million plant in which it's produced to Kansas City. An earlier proposal passed the state house but then stalled in mid-April in the Senate after some lawmakers balked at offering up to $880 million in tax credits over 22 years. Others questioned why the company would agree to indefinite ongoing royalty payments to the state for each jet sold. The new plan offers tax abatement worth $240 million over 8 years, would require the company to repay that entire amount plus 5.1% interest, and release the company from the per-plane royalties as soon as the tax credits were repaid. The state could suspend the tax breaks at any point if the outstanding balance owed by Bombardier exceeded $155 million. Yesterday's 24-8 approval in the Senate gets the proposal over its last major political hurdle. The plan now heads back to the House, which had already approved the bigger plan, and then goes on to Governor Matt Blunt, who supports the idea. State leaders say the plant could create 2,000 jobs directly and at least 5,000 more at other area employers. Bombardier spokesman Mark Duquesne said the plane maker would prefer to keep the plant closer to home in Mirabel, Quebec, but adds regarding the Kansas City effort, quote, "We believe that their offer will be a very, very serious and interesting one," unquote. The son of a pilot killed Tuesday in the crash of a Turbine Legend experimental aircraft near Tulsa, Oklahoma, says the plane was experiencing engine problems that his father was attempting to fix. 72-year-old Claire Trumsness took off from Miami Municipal Airport just before 2 p.m. Central Time Tuesday. The aircraft came down on the center median of the Will Rogers Turnpike at mile marker 312 shortly thereafter. The pilot's son, David Trumsness, told the Tulsa World about his father, quote, "The plane was having some engine problems and he was trying to correct them," unquote. Tromsnes, who was a retired speech drama and English professor at Northeastern Oklahoma A&M College, bought the already completed home-built aircraft last year. He had flown it before, according to his wife, but not for very many hours. Witnesses said the plane maneuvered erratically just before the crash. Still ahead, Continental Airlines may join a transatlantic alliance. Delta pilots begin voting on their post-merger contract offer. And one of the UK's most colorful characters is arrested after landing near Crawford, Texas. You're listening to Aero News.
Welcome to Cirrus Design, maker of the world's best-selling personal aircraft, the sleek SR-22. Cirrus planes feature the latest technologies and are equipped with an exclusive, life-saving parachute system. It is our mission to make personal aviation safe, affordable, and convenient. At Cirrus, we offer a test drive like no one else in the business.
Shoot happens. Come on, you know it does. Even the world's top test pilots know there are in-flight situations you can't always recover from. Mid-air collision, control failure, pilot incapacitation. In severe emergencies, do what the world's top test pilots do. Use a parachute. Except, instead of having to bail out of a moving aircraft, you can have the safety of a BRS full airframe recovery parachute. BRS has parachutes for an enormous variety of aircraft, from experimental to light sport, and all the way to retrofits on certified airplanes. Shoot happens. Will you be ready when it does? Call BRS today at 651-457-8651 or visit us online at brsparachutes.com.
Back to wrap up your Aero Briefing for Friday, May 2nd, 2008. I'm Paul Plack. Continental Airlines is beginning to look like one of the smarter players in the airline consolidation frenzy. Continental's merger talks with United had many industry analysts scratching their heads, especially after United lost over $500 million just in the first quarter. Well, last weekend, Continental announced it had broken off those talks and would continue as an independent company. United reportedly plunged immediately into final talks for a merger with U.S. Airways, which itself has unfinished business from its last merger with America West 3 years ago. Now, it looks as if Continental may have found a way to drink the milk without buying the cow. The Fort Worth Star-Telegram reports American Airlines has confirmed that it's exploring opportunities for cooperating with Continental and British Airways, presumably in a marketing alliance. In a short statement on Wednesday, British Airways issued a brief statement confirming the talks. Quote, further details will be announced when appropriate, unquote. U.S. law prohibits foreign airlines from merging with American or Continental, but a marketing coalition could let the three sell seats on each other's flights and coordinate award programs without combining workforces, resolving corporate culture clashes, or defending lawsuits from unhappy stockholders, any of which could happen in an actual merger. Analysts tell the paper that if Continental was to join the One World Alliance, which currently includes American and BA, it would essentially allow the three to operate as a single carrier on flights across the Atlantic and could be worth hundreds of millions of dollars. The airlines would have to be granted immunity from antitrust action before forming such a transatlantic alliance, and that's been a problem in the past. But the recent wave of quarterly losses and bankruptcies among U.S. airlines, combined with the opening of London Heathrow to more competition under the Open Skies Agreement, could make this the right time to try again. As analyst and consultant Daryl Jenkins put it, quote, if I was in American's place, I'd be at the Department of Justice at dawn every day arguing this case. They have a lot more leverage now, unquote. Delta Airlines' 7,400 pilots started voting yesterday on a new contract that would give them pay raises and an equity stake in merged Delta and Northwest Airlines. If the yes votes prevail, the carrier's existing collective bargaining agreement would be extended through 2012. In exchange for a 3.5% pay raise and other benefits, Delta management would have greater authority over the merged airline, including Northwest's stake in Midwest Airlines. What's missing from the deal is any reference to how pilots at Northwest would be integrated into the merged airline. That's going to leave Northwest's 5,000 pilots to negotiate their own deal with management, and also leave them no doubt to wish they'd gotten an agreement done back in February. Voting at Delta runs through May 14th. The UK's Royal Air Force, the Royal Aeronautical Society, and Virgin Galactic have joined to launch Mission Virgin Galactic, billed as a truly innovative national schools competition. Mission Virgin Galactic will be open to all 11 to 14-year-old students throughout the UK and has been designed to complement the national curriculum. Its goal is to inspire students in the areas of science, math, technology, and engineering in a fun and exciting way. London's Channel 4 reports students will work in teams of four to design a product demonstrating one or more principles used in the Virgin Galactic program. That product must also be marketable to consumers. Members of the winning team and their teacher will get the chance to fly to the U.S. to watch the launch of Spaceship Two with Sir Richard Branson. And finally, Maurice Kirk is just a square peg in a round hole. Or, maybe more charitably, a throwback to aviation's barnstorming era. In 1979, Kirk found a 1943 Piper Cub believed to have been flown by General Patton after the June 6, 1944 D-Day landings. Kirk made a somewhat clandestine flight to get the plane to the UK, avoiding airfields because, as his website puts it, he was, quote, rather light on paperwork, unquote. He eventually restored the plane, naming her Liberty Girl. In 2001, a U.S. visitor to his website sent him a donation of £25,000 to cover expenses of flying the Cub in the London to Sydney air races. That started an obsession with flying the plane around the world, and a series of adventures or misadventures, which included a crash in Hong Kong, which led to the plane being impounded, and the solicitation of more donations to get her home and fixed again. Early this year, the quest continued, but the eccentric British pilot was forced to ditch in the Caribbean in February. He was plucked from the water by the U.S. Coast Guard, and the plane was rescued and repaired yet again. On April 25th, Kirk decided to fly in and drop off a note thanking President Bush personally for that Coast Guard rescue. At Crawford, Texas. You see where this is going? BBC reports Kirk made an unannounced landing in a farmer's field April 25th. McLennan County Sheriff's deputies responded, and when Kirk couldn't walk in a straight line due to his arthritis, he was mistaken for a drunk and then taken to a psychiatric hospital for evaluation. Maurice's wife, Kirsty, says her husband isn't crazy, just, quote, somewhat eccentric, and I don't know what Americans would make of him, unquote. It's not clear that Kirk violated prohibited Area 49, which covers only a 3-nautical-mile radius around the ranch when Bush is not present. It's reasonable to assume, however, that the Secret Service would not take any chances with Kirk, who has paid tens of thousands of dollars in fines for various run-ins with UK authorities over the years. But Maurice Kirk, whatever else he may be, is what Kirsty calls, quote, a very good pilot for that sort of aircraft. He is a purist's pilot, an aviator. The sort of flying that Maurice does is landing in fields and little grass airstrips. He uses a plane the way some people use a sports car, to get to things. He just loves flying, unquote. Boy, if that J3 could only talk, I'm sure it would tell some wild stories about Patton, and some even wilder ones about Maurice Kirk. And that's the latest from Aero News. Remember to check out the ANN special feature. The recent legal woes of T-Alert aircraft engines notwithstanding, the company has made a major impact on aviation. Today we're going to hear how the engines came about from company founder Frank T-Alert, and why they're now available in the Cessna 172 from Cessna's Jack Pelton and Roger White. And if you haven't done it yet, subscribe to our AeroCasts. Find them on iTunes, Yahoo, Odeo, and at our website, www.aero.news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Enjoy your weekend. Have a clear and unlimited day.